When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of TOAP Classics, where we take an old episode of Turned Out a Punk that has disappeared from the internet and revive it and bring it back to its former glory, restoring it to the feed. And today is a very special one because we are reviving my friend, my bandmate, actually, I think the person I've known the longest in all of Fucked Up's history, Sandy Miranda, is on the show. One of my favorite episodes. I really enjoyed doing this the first time, and hopefully you enjoy hearing it today. We are doing this because Fucked Up, Turned Out a Punk, and Fucked Up too, because Fucked Up has a brand new record called Another Day, which is out this Friday. We are going to be having a 24-hour stream. If you're listening to this podcast, the day it drops, so there will be a link in the description. You can click on that and watch Fucked Up sitting in the studio working on some songs together. We are doing this, of course, because we are nuts and also because we have this new record called Another Day. I've been talking about it on the show. Also, this Friday, I will be having a special get-together release party live Turned Out a Punk podcast. I'm still putting that together, but it'll be fun. And it's going to be at Emissions Records at Dundas Street West here in Toronto, Dundas and Ossington. Come on by. It looks like we're going to have some food. I'm going to be playing some records. We're going to be selling some records, including the very special Turned Out a Punk Emissions Records edition of Another Day on Turned Out a Punk green vinyl with splatters in it. It looks awesome. So come on down, see that. Check out this 24-hour stream. But above all else, check out this new record that Fucked Up has done, being the band that I play in too. Very excited for you to hear this. Very proud of this record. And what better way to celebrate than by bringing in the coolest member of Fucked Up, Sandy Miranda. Well, bringing back an old episode with Sandy Miranda. She's hard to pin down. I don't know if I could get her for another appearance on the show. But I do have this classic one for you to hear. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm at Left for Damien on Twitter or Instagram. The podcast is Turned Out a Punk on all the platforms out there. Normally there's video versions of this thing, except for the classic episodes on YouTube. And that's it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Sandy Miranda on Turned Out a Punk. See you on the live stream or on Emissions Records on Friday. But enough about that, Sandy. Now on to this. Sandy.
How are the levels?
This is good.
I speak lower than you, and the mic is further away from me.
Already it begins. Sandy, thanks for doing the show. I really appreciate it. I put it through Levelator. Don't worry. It's fine.
Okay.
It'll be fixed. Sandy, I really appreciate you doing the show. This is a special 1 year anniversary one.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for a year now.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Obviously, I wanted to do something special for the 1 year anniversary, but like it wasn't like, you know, it was like, who would I have on there? Who could be, you know, what could be a special enough story? You don't want to elevate anyone and say anyone's like, oh, more special than someone else or anything like that. But then I was thinking, who have I known the longest?
You took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. And then I was also thinking, who has been requested? Someone from the band. And who is one of my longest friends at this point? Sandy.
Yes.
So who better than to share this episode and make it a little more autobiographical than usual than yourself? Thank you for doing it.
Thanks for having me. Sorry it took months to nail this down.
No, we are doing this as we say, just at the last minute.
Yeah, yeah.
It's coming down the wire. But no, We are awesomely doing it. And cool. So I'm stoked that we got to do it. But Sandy, I'm going to start them off like I start them all off. And I know you've heard a couple of these before. So
yes.
How'd you get into punk?
Well, I guess it's a combination of a few things.
Do you remember like the first time you heard it?
It's really hard to say because I had heard of the Ramones, like I'd hear them on the radio from a young age, and I'd, remember thinking, oh, that kind of sounds like the Beach Boys, which I listened to a lot of, when I was much younger. Kid? Yeah, definitely. Growing up, we didn't have much money, so we basically relied on the radio, on television, and I mean, we had like, two tapes in the car.
Yeah.
And not punk tapes.
No, of course not.
But, there was like ABBA Gold was one of them.
I know you and ABBA.
Yeah.
I know you love ABBA.
I think the other one may have been the Sound of Music soundtrack. And I love both. To this day, they kind of laid down the foundations to me of what, pop structure is in music, pop sensibilities. But as for punk, I guess that came more so... Like, I remember seeing on TV, like, there was a documentary. I'm kind of blanking
History
on
History of Rock and Roll?
It was probably one of those.
I was talking about that with Tristan the other day. It was on Much Music, I think.
I remember they had a clip, with Psycho Killer, that was on it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a black and white clip, and it's like, yeah. That's definitely that footage. It's Bob Gruen's footage, I think.
Okay. Well, do you remember the...
It's called The History of Rock and Roll, and the episode's called Punk.
Yeah.
They actually have it on DVD at the library up the street from my house.
So I feel like that kind of came about concurrently when I was also, in high school, and,
grade 9, right?
It would have been, like, grade 9. And it was, the mid-90s, and punk was, coming up, like, in the mass, masses, to the masses, I mean. I had a couple friends in school that listened to it, and I remember this wasn't the first time I listened to punk, but I do have a memory of like listening to NoFX with my singer at the time, on our Walkman, The Cause was playing,
When you say singer, you mean of the band?
Of my band in high school.
That you would form.
I eventually. Well, they asked me if I could play bass, and I...
Oh, then were they already a band?
I think they were, like, talking about being a band, or it was just early days, and I didn't play at the time, but I was like, I could do this, and my mom plays a little bit, apparently I have a lot of uncles that play, so, the creative spirit is alive in my family, but, I just kind of rented went to a store, rented a bass for a month, and put some Rancid on and tried to figure out, Journey to the End of the East Bay, which to me was sort of like, it was difficult. Mm-hmm. It is still a difficult song to play, especially that solo.
Matt Freeman's bass on there is like, that song's a bass-driven song.
Yeah, very much so. and I made it a point to sort of get there.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of how I started to play and how I guess I started to listen. But yeah, the TV show and...
Green Day
were big.
When I think about you in the early days, when I first met you,
and
I was talking to my brother about this too. Green Day,
You and him were obsessed.
Both obsessed with Green Day. But he's got a very distinct memory about waiting at the Phoenix when Green Day did that surprise show at the Phoenix.
Oh yeah,
outside, and his girlfriend at the time made him go home, and you're like, you're not sticking around, and then you went back and interviewed him for your zine.
I did.
But we're jumping ahead.
Yeah, we are jumping ahead.
Because we got to talk about your zine, too.
Yeah.
But SNI was SNI was first, right?
Yeah, SNI, they're called Some New Invention. It was a three-piece, I guess it was like skate punk kind of stuff, because, that's kind of what was happening at the time. Plus, my drummer was a skater, and, my singer was, I guess, a punk.
It was... I remember the band because I played with you guys with You're in Trouble.
Yeah. Well, back then, we were teenagers. We were living in for those years I was in the burbs, and although coming downtown a lot. We could play were pay to plays.
Yeah, well, that's what
you
we
know,
did
that's
too.
Just what you did. Like there was no other way around it. And, they were lame. But also, kind of fun because we got to meet people,
yep.
We'd see the other bands playing, like for instance, you guys, your old band, you know, we'd be like, you know, the like among the few punk bands playing. There were a lot of ragey, you know, Rage Against the Machine kind of bands playing. What else?
It was like, always really weird. Sum 41 wasn't playing them, but there was what was the pre-Sum 41 with London in it? Special Ed.
Oh, Special Ed. Yeah, they were. Yeah,
they were on the circuit.
And they were doing a lot. Yeah,
they were on the circuit. There was also I remember. I'm trying to remember some of the other bands that were on this.
Sumfucker. I remember Sumfucker
was definitely on that. Tire Kickers were on it a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just but they left it real quick because they got signed to Raw
Energy.
You know, but it was you know, it was pay to play, but you only had to sell 10 tickets, and everyone had, you know. I made sure to pick a popular guy to be our drummer, so.
Oh, yeah.
So it was easy for him to sell, you know, 10 tickets. And we had sold, the first show we ever played, I thought we had sold a ton of tickets, you know, because he had you know, told people to come, and you know, I had even sold a couple tickets to people I knew. And, you know, we get there, and they're like, and the headliner was going to be Five Knuckle Chuckle, a band that also we'll talk about because they mean a lot to us.
Yeah.
Both. And Five Knuckle Chuckle, the band that sold the most tickets was going to be direct support for Five Knuckle Chuckle. And we were like, wow, like we've sold a lot of tickets. We were going to open for Five Knuckle Chuckle. We get there that night. It's like, no, you guys sold the second most amount of tickets.
Yeah. Like, and how many bands are in the bill? Like eight or something?
It was like 10 bands. And they're like, so ridiculous. They're like, yeah, another band sold more tickets than you guys. We're like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That band must be insanely good. And then so we played. And it was the worst set ever. And I'm like, people are going to remember this forever. And then I heard maybe the worst version of Brohim ever coming from the stage.
Mm.
SNI had sold the most tickets that night.
Yeah.
And it wasn't you in the band. Everyone who saw that band, you know, was all, but it was definitely, you know, some other things in that band were not that great.
Yo, definitely. We were teenagers. I mean, you know, our drummer didn't even have, like, proper stuff. Like, his pedal was made with, like, tape and...
cardboard.
Bits and pieces. Yeah, you know, we were kids and...
No, but it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool until I got kicked out because I wasn't really fitting the image of the band.
Yeah, because you were a girl. Wasn't that
girl,
the reason?
I was a girl I was, like, I didn't skate.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't dress particularly punk.
You know what's incredible? That band is never going to be mentioned ever again unless it's in the context of being your first band.
Yeah.
You know, like, no one is ever going to talk about them unless it's followed by... That's the band that the bass player Fucked Up played in.
Yeah, it's all good. I mean, it was a great experience and, you know...
A great experience? I think you had way better experiences later.
But... Like, it was critical to, like, you know.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
The path that I ultimately ended, you know.
You're
like,
true.
It was the beginning,
it
you know.
Set you up
it,
there.
It was a pivot,
mm-hmm.
You know. But, yeah, so.
Were you into other types of music, like, other than those two tapes? Like what other stuff were you gravitating towards on the radio prior to the punk stuff? Were you, like,
prior
metal
to the
at all? Or?
Prior to the punk stuff, I was, you know, a fan of oldies.
Okay.
You know, again, pop sensibilities,
yeah.
Like Everly Brothers, Beatles, like, you know, like basic rock pop
yeah.
stuff. And because that was accessible, you know what I mean? Like, you didn't really need money to be able to tune into to those songs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then, but once I got into punk, that was all I was into. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I remember, like, working at I was working at HMV for a number of years back then. I remember,
didn't,
like...
Did you work at another record store first, or did you?
No. I mean... I would have liked
okay,
it, but
yeah.
No. I remember, you know, filing the alternative section and being like, oh, Belle and Sebastian, like, what's this, you know, garbage later. But then I came, like, later on to appreciate them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, just punk stuff. But, you know, it's what was happening at the time, you know? Like, Good Riddance, I was a big fan of, you know, Green Day, as we've said, NoFX. So we've said, you know, there are a bunch. Like, I still have my collection
mm-hmm.
behind you there. You know, Bouncing Souls and stuff. But of course, then as I got older, I remember being 23 and...
Whoa, you're jumping way ahead.
Okay.
I want to stay in the teenage years.
You want to stay... Okay.
Well, we got to talk about
yeah.
your zine. Because you did
yeah,
one
yeah.
of the great
well,
zines of Toronto in the 90s.
Well, when I got into punk, and you know, I was about... I guess I was about 16, 90, you know, 96, 95 maybe. I really wanted, you know, I had a lot of free time as a kid and I really wanted to like do something. So I remember, starting the zine. I'm not sure if starting the zine came before, volunteering with Raw Energy or the other way around. But, you know, yeah. I came up to them, you know, I'd see them at shows and stuff, and I just offered, I guess it was street team stuff. I was a teenager and I was like, hey, like, how can I help? You know, I could do anything. And,
yeah, you did that for a couple labels. Obviously, Raw Energy was like a pop punk label that did like a Trigger Happy,
Trunk,
Five Knuckle Chuckle,
Three Impotent Males, who were both big fans of.
Big fans of.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm blanking on his name because my memory sucks, but their friend who did the art for them did the art for my zine.
Yeah, that was like the thing about your zine. It was everything about it was just like, you know, I did a zine that, of course, back then never came out, thank God, a pop punk zine, like, at the same time, that never came out. Zach did Duct Tape, and Duct Tape was also really awesome, but, the graphics on yours, like, getting this guy to do the illustrations,
headings and stuff, like, I tried
to have photos.
And pull from the community, you know, I had friends write stuff for it, I reached out to bands, labels, like, I even sold ad space. Although really, mostly got CDs in return, but it was a great experience to do the 3 issues, and I interviewed pretty much all my favorite bands at the time. Like, I remember taking a bus trip to the Epitaph Summer Nationals, and like Doors played, and Rancid played, and NoFX, and you know that whole roster back then. So I did the zine for a bit. You know,
was that before you started HMV? Did you start there?
Yeah, it would have been before. I did it from like 96 to 99. And during that time, well, then there's Mods and Rockers.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, but before we get there, I want to talk about the zine. Because like, you interviewed one of the craziest things you got, like, because you were...
I've got the issues right there.
Oh, it's an amazing zine. But one of the, you know, you've never sold me those. I got to buy all 3 of them.
I may have spares of a couple, but not of all.
Whichever ones you do, I want to get them. Because they were... Because that was the thing about that zine. It was just like, you were such a hard worker from such an early age.
Yeah, I used to actually take a bus to Newmarket because a friend of mine owned a scanner. Yeah. So I would take this like hour and a half trip each way just to scan the zines and you know, CEs or whatever for the reviews. You know what I mean? And also like just like I shot most of the photos for the zine. You know, I had to scan the images, but I was always busy. I remember using WordPerfect, which had the blue screen, you know, and typing everything and doing the layout somewhat manually back then. I just really got a kick out of gathering information from various sources and putting into like a cohesive like thing.
But now that I think about it, before that, because it must have been before that, there was the AFI Good Riddance Riot show with Lifetime and Weston, and AFI showed a play. But I remember before AFI played, this is one of the first times I remember talking to you. You're like, this band AFI is amazing. I'm like, yeah, I saw him play with Rancid. And you're like, yeah, I've been writing the lead singer. And you showed me a letter that Davey had written back to you.
Yeah.
Because you were writing to bands.
Back then, we wrote to bands. Like,
I said I was writing to bands and I planned on writing to bands. I very rarely went through with it.
I only wrote to a few, and I actually still have those letters. I have a binder of all, like...
You kept every of those letters? That's awesome.
My zine was called Second Last. Yeah. So I have a binder of all my Second Last stuff, including this letter. Like, I made letterhead for Second Last. Yeah. I have all my correspondence with all the labels. Like, pretty much anything, you know. Before it was before email, because one of the last additions to this binder was an email from Trunk.
Oh.
So, but everything before was, handwritten.
But this you were writing to the bands before that, because AFI, that was before your zine started. Because I knew you when you started your zine.
Yeah.
And this was like just when I was first meeting you.
It would have been around that time, because that was when I was super eager and excited and wanting to sort of, you know, explore this community. And I don't know, it was really cool. Like, I remember through, you know, I would really love Green Day, and I'm learning about this like SoCal punk, and like, well, I wonder what California is like. And I remember, you know, somehow getting the number to I think I looked in a, I don't know if I could have looked in a phone book, but I somehow got the number to the Gilman Street, like, diner next door to the club, you know, because I couldn't get the number to 924 Gilman, but I could get the number to maybe it was, you know, 926, like, Gilman Street pub or something. And I called them once and I was like, hey, so like, what's it like? And be like, you know, there's shows just, you know, just wanting to, you know, kind of
experience it.
That's because awesome. This was pre-internet. Yeah. I didn't even have an email address.
Wow.
And I was trying to sort of get a first-hand account of someone on the ground.
Yeah.
Even though they were on the ground.
Well, that's also used to call bands, too.
I don't remember.
Zach and I were talking the other day, and he's like, yeah, I remember like one of the first times I met Sandy afterwards, she called me, and we were talking on the phone. I guess it was
Zach
Felberg.
Felberg?
Yeah. And you're like, you were talking about Green Day with him, and it was like 2 a.m. or something.
I mean, I was super eager, kind of an annoying kid. Like, I was just super wanting to suck it all up and like, I don't know, because it was fascinating to me.
Well, it just seems like you might, maybe, I don't know, just knowing you and knowing, you know, a little bit about growing up and, you know, like you said, being a little alone in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Is that you kind of, it's like you had all this energy and it just you were just like, this is...
Totally. I wanted to just, here was something that I was actually finally excited about. Because I mean, up until then, you know, I mean, I have brothers and sisters, but I mean, they're way older than me. My brother is 15 years older than me. My sister is like 7 years older than me. So I kind of felt like an only child a lot of the time. Especially so in my teenage years. Mm-hmm. And my mom was working all the time. So I got excited. It was something to get excited about. And like, you know, I'm like, well, if I was having this much fun, then everyone else must be having this much fun too. Like, I want to meet some of these people. So, yeah, and that's what inspired me to like get involved with Raw Energy and do my zine and, you know, the radio show that we went on to do. I was a part of for like about 4 years, I think it was.
You also, I think, didn't you? Melanie Kay was telling me that you worked at Fat Records.
I did.
That was before that too. I think
it was. You know, I feel like it was all around that time, maybe near the later end. That I was, Melanie Kay, who does publicity for Fat and has for a while.
She's been on the podcast in the background. She's going to be on a whole episode soon.
Awesome, yeah. I bet she has stories to tell.
Oh, she's got,
you know, because
like,
I met Jello Biafra through her, like, before.
Started doing shows when she was 15 years old.
Yeah, I saw a photo that she had posted about that. It's cool. I was just super eager to, like, just get super involved. And eventually chilled out. I became less annoying because I remember... Like, when I was a huge fan of Dillinger Four, I was, like, definitely, like, an annoying... I was a punisher towards them, probably, but...
Well, I was telling... Tristan and I were talking about this, too, the other day, my brother, that... Yeah, like, I was a punisher, too. You know, think about just, like, the way, like, you know, the band's like, hey, can I get your email address? And it's like, or can I get your phone number?
Yeah. Well, see, if you do a zine, then it's chill.
That's what we came up with, the scam, but our zine never came out. Yours did.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, legit. And it still stands up as like, you know, there's some cool stuff in it. Like, I remember you looking through old issues of Max Rock and Roll and seeing that like Ask a Punk section.
Yeah. You're in it and Mike's in one of them also. It's pretty funny to look back.
No, but I know. I just think it's so like, it's so cool that here you are doing that as a zine, you know, like,
it was
awesome as, you know, and I was so impressed by it as a kid. Like, here's someone, like a peer of mine, who's actually putting something out that is so thick that it can't even fit in a stapler.
I had to staple it from both sides.
And
it
then took, put tape.
And then put hockey tape to sort of give it a clean edge. I remember one time another person in the scene at that time, he had copied my tape thing. So I felt, you know, a little satisfied. Yeah.
Scene Swagger Jacker.
Eric Warner.
Yeah. Look at that. Inspiration.
Yeah, so it was cool that it inspired. But, you know, ever since I stopped doing the zine, I there's a part of me that wants to do it again. Not like what I did before, which is very much sort of a Max and Rock and Roll style, you know, zine. But I definitely, like, the itch is still in me to publish. And so that's kind of what I'm doing, what I'm moving towards, just, you know, this winter.
Did you ever do one photo book? Did that come out or no?
Man, I know I
thought you did one.
I've been thinking about it to death, as you know, it's my perfectionism. But yeah, it's going to happen now. I got a monitor.
It's gonna be second last issue 4.
Yeah.
But, 20-year drought is over.
Yeah.
Here it comes. So I guess like from there, you and I started,
MRR.
Started doing MRR. Actually, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up, which is like the most dedication I'd ever witnessed.
Oh, not MRR. Mods and Rockers.
Mods and Rockers. But M&R.
M&R.
But before we get there, yeah, one of the memories that I had, very vivid memories, I roadied. The first thing I ever did in the band was help my friend's band, the band, B-A-N-N-E-D, B-A-N.
Oh, yeah, band is cool.
Yeah. I helped them roadied for them at the Tire Kickers demo release party, mm-hmm. which Five Knuckle Chuckle played. And you had spent all the money you made from working in that pizza parlor that you worked at and took a cab out to see the show.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Did I go with Kevin or is that... I can't remember, but yeah, it was like
you were
70,
by yourself.
$72 or something for a cab. Was it Orangeville?
It was Orangeville.
I remember
or
that.
Or Brampton or something, but like, yeah, definitely around there.
Yeah, because yeah, actually, yeah, Kevin and I had to take cabs a couple times. We wanted to go to the show so badly and there was no other way to get out there.
I remember one time you told me you took a cab to see, because Five Uncle Chuckle played a rave.
Yeah, I remember that. I have the room in my head. That was Orangeville.
Yeah, do you remember the first time you saw Five Uncle Chuckle?
It was when they opened up. Didn't they open up for Pennywise?
With Joy Killer.
I remember. Oh my God. So this is kind of funny. So yeah, they opened up for Pennywise, you know, go to the gig. And I thought, you know, I thought the opener, Five Knuckle, said, "Hey, we're from Orange County. We're Five Knuckle Chuckle," right? And I was like, "Oh, cool." But then I learned later it was their Orangeville.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, like that's my own backyard, you know? And yeah. And then from then on, I became a massive fan and, you know, got to be friends with them and still respect them.
Yeah. It's actually, Corey hit me up a couple years ago. I talked to him on email a little bit and stuff. And then when I interviewed Edge, the wrestler, I brought them up to him and it blew his mind because he was like friends with him in high school. Could not believe that I knew them. I'm like, they were a big band for me.
Well, yeah, definitely.
And then we
for
played them on the Wedge.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
They had a video.
Well, I'm going to have to watch this later.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it's on YouTube. They should definitely put that up on YouTube.
But yeah, I mean, I got a little... I got my first taste of touring with Trigger Happy right before that Riot show at the Opera House.
Okay, yeah.
Because for years...
Which would have been just after the Tire Kickers demo release party in Orangeville.
Yeah, around that time.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Oh, yeah, that came about because Trigger Happy were playing some shows. I can't remember who they were playing with, but I think it was like a two-band thing. And
Was it Good Riddance?
I think, okay, yeah, that sounds right.
Was it leading into that Riot tour?
Yeah, so it was Good Riddance then.
Oh, yeah, because AFI and Lifetime and Weston just jumped on the bill. But yeah, I think the rest of the tour was Trigger Happy, Good Riddance, and then Ignite didn't make it into the country or something.
Mm-hmm. So it was that. So they had a few shows booked, like, you know, a one in London called The Office, and one in Kitchener, sort of like in a basement kind of.
Trashateria, I think was it Danceteria?
I don't remember. I'm not sure which show was the first one, but I basically took a bus, like, you know, one way bus ticket out to maybe it was London. No, I think it was Kitchener. I took a bus to Kitchener. Didn't know where I was going to stay. Like, I used to kind of do this, actually. Like, travel somewhere and figure it out. You know, make some friends at the show and then, like, stay with them and be cool. But, yeah, went to Kitchener to see Trigger Happy and, you know, went up to them, chatted with them. You know, I was pretty enthusiastic. And they thought it was cool, I guess, you know, and they let me do their merch, which now that I'm in a band, I'm like, whoa, a kid wants to do the merch? Yeah, take it, please. But I was just
I don't know, you're letting, like, a 15-year-old kid handle your merch. And also the fact that you're a 15-year-old kid.
I think,
like,
I probably was 16. I was probably 16.
I don't know. I'm doing the math in my head. I think we're like
15. I think that show was 96. But no, maybe not.
Maybe you're right. No, 96. Maybe it was just 96.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was 16. And, yeah. And I don't know what happened, but, you know, I kind of let on. I didn't have a ride home. And, you know, they're like, well, we're going to play London and then Toronto if you want to come with us. And I was like, whoa, awesome. And, yeah.
Did you cab out to that show? Is that it?
No, I took a bus.
Okay.
I took a bus and I was just totally stoked. It was my first, and it was never weird at all. It was just they're, you know, really nice guys and, you know, they saw how eager I was. It was totally a great experience.
Yeah.
Nothing like weird about it. I mean, now that I'm thinking back, like, whoa, 16-year-old with like a group of guys, but it's not. It wasn't. Because it was punk. We were united through punk, yeah. I guess. And we were like siblings. We became, they were like brothers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was.
Trigraph is another band that, like, yeah, definitely. It was like sometimes you'd have amazing experiences with some of the people in the band. Sometimes you wouldn't have as great experiences with people in the band. But like, you're, that's like, yeah, that's awesome. They brought,
yeah,
you
on the, it was fantastic. It was, I got a taste because I've always wanted to be able to travel too and like just see the world, you know, meet people like. I've been wandering, you know, even as a little kid, like my mom would tell me that when I was 5 and 6, I would just go on these walks by myself, which would freak her out. And on a couple occasions, the cops would return me to my house and say, ma'am, you know, if you find her again, you're going to lose her, you know, but I would just wander out, not in a running away sense, but just like being sick of cooped up, being sick of being cooped up and just wanting to get out there. So part of me is always just want to see the world, and playing music, you know, seems like a great vehicle for that. Plus the fact that I love music, it was just mm-hmm. like, you mm-hmm. know, dream come true. And then played Kitchener, London. Well, I didn't play. Yeah. I was the Trigger Happy
You're
late.
On the tour. You guys gigged.
Trigger Happy late, you know, and then, you know, going straight to the Opera House show. Like, I remember we were running kind of late and yeah. You know, then that show went down. It was absolutely insane, which I'm sure you've talked about on the show a few times.
Come up one time with Jordan. I think that's the only time we've maybe we've talked about it briefly. But yeah, that show is definitely a turning point when the kids overthrew security and ran the show. I remember Ewan did stage. I've got a vivid memory of like Ewan Exile on the front of the stage doing like helping people who are crowd surfing and stuff. And it was just, it felt like,
you remember, like, the security guard was being kind of rough with the kid, and then I remember David being like, get him!
Yeah.
And the kids just, like, ran after the
kids,
security guard.
Kids had their say that day.
Yeah. But, yeah, so playing that show, and then I remember, you know, coming home. At the time, I was living downtown and just being like, yeah, just laying in bed, and just last few days, just sort of, like, you know, some, like, I don't know. It was a big thing. So I'd always wanted to tour. Like, I remember when the Stiffs were touring, and I remember being, you know, annoying 16-year-old Sandy being like, hey, guys, you know.
Sorry, Sandy, they already had a roadie.
Yeah, I know. But I remember being, just wanting to so bad and
His
feeling.
His name was Damien Abraham.
Yeah, I know. You got to do it. But it's chill because, you know, I got to do it, you know. Now and yeah. fucked up. So.
No, absolutely. No, and you did.
And we've seen the world.
And that's the thing, is like you were such a fan of music so early on that I knew you would wind up somehow involved in music. Oh,
that
we got
could,
a pause.
It could be my mother.
What? Oh, whoa! Wait, so this is everyone's contact?
Yeah.
Public display. We can find out who's in public display. Mark, that's London.
Yeah, I bet.
So he was in public display.
Oh, you are in trouble. Oh, look, your number.
There I am.
Is that your number still? No.
That's my mom's number, but that's Tristan's number now.
Oh, wait.
Like, if you put like a different prefix there.
Yeah.
Stiffs was Mike.
Yeah.
Familiar Alien. I remember that band, too.
I don't.
I don't remember them at all, apart from that name.
I'm saying, look at it.
Wow, who's on this first... What's this first page?
Personal phone numbers. Just
friends,
I guess.
These are just friends.
And then label phone numbers.
Labels phone numbers. I wonder how many are still in... You know, like, oh, prank?
Yeah.
We like, know some of these people now.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately know some of these people now. That's so weird.
And then band numbers.
The band. Public display broke up. Fuck, I'm gonna take a picture of this and put it on my Instagram.
Venue
contacts. Wow. Okay.
Label interaction tracking sheet.
What?
Contents received.
Oh,
sent.
Wow.
It's just a log of what came in and out.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. Look at your record keeping. Back then, for like a little teenager.
I know.
Like, it's, no wonder you're the one that controls this band's, everything about this band financially.
Second last sales and earnings report.
Wow. You earned.
I didn't do a full add up, but.
No.
Yeah, because I had to keep track of the consignment.
Yeah, consignments. You had to do consignments at these stores.
Okay, this is a copy of how many I printed and sold and how many I gave away in consignment and cost and gain. And
wow. Look at this. This is like the most, like for any zine, outgoing letters.
Oh my God. You photocopied your outgoing letters. That's so weird.
Oh, that's when you got your own
letter.
Steve
Waxman?
What is he, the
Warner Music Canada? What the fuck? What the fuck was I writing?
Green Day.
Green Day.
I'm trying to get Green Day contacts.
And then, I did. And then I interviewed them, and then I was no longer.
No, but you didn't get that. From what Tristan told me, you got that from because you were like hanging out outside, and then eventually they just like came out and said, okay, you guys can come in.
I did do some pre-work.
Oh, yeah, some press. Pre-press? Okay.
Some press. Yeah, like you can't just. Oh, yeah, so these are letters.
Wait, is this? We gotta see this at the top. Interviews, H2O, Union 13, 10 foot pole, straight face. Oh, is this what you're trying to write to editor? To Epitaph?
Yeah, I guess this is me just saying. Maybe I'm asking for money or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. We did have a relationship. Like, she was nice.
What label is she from?
I feel like this is Nitro.
Oh. Maybe.
I heard, yeah. I never met her, but the corresponding with her was fantastic. She's very positive.
Wow. But it must have been cool, like, you know, especially to be, you know, and especially that time in skate punk, because it was such a dude-driven scene. Like, band-wise. Like, it was all dude bands. Like, there was obviously Tilt and stuff like that, but.
My show list.
Whoa.
For a while, I kept track of the shows I went to. Down
so
to the
Eric
bands.
Trips and the Melvins, was that your first show?
Yeah. That was my first show that wasn't like a free thing in the park.
How come you didn't talk about that? That's like way cooler than whatever you said your free show was.
Because we didn't get to that point. I don't know. We didn't talk about my first show.
Well, that's gotta be, like, that's your first show. We should talk about it.
Yeah. No, we should talk about it.
Okay. So, like, okay, let's talk about it. Okay. Now, people have been, I've been recording this part.
I think it's good, interesting. Good that you have.
It's interesting. But, okay. So now we're at this part. Eric Tripps and the Melvins. Eric's Trip, sorry. And the Melvins. Because the anniversary show, we're partying more than I normally do on this podcast.
Yeah, it's cool.
But,
March 25th, 1995. I don't want to say that.
Wow.
Well, back then, I was sick, you know.
Sandy showed me her rating. A little harsh. Someone was not getting best new music in second
but
last for that
here's
show.
The thing. I was young and stupid.
But okay.
Well, look at the next show.
But why did you decide?
It was stupid.
Why did you decide to go see Eric Stripp and the Melvins? Like, what was it about those bands? Where did you first get introduced to those bands?
Well, this actually has a little sad ending. But you know, I was in school and I had a friend. His name was Philippe. And he was like, he kind of, I guess he was probably as integral as S&I as getting me into music. He was just a friend. And I remember he had a baseball cap that said Fiber. I think it was a band that maybe he was in or his friend's band.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go to the show. So like we went to the show. And I wore white jeans and like a blue like plaid shirt, and I moshed for the first time. And this was back when you could still smoke in the opera house.
Oh yeah, you could definitely still smoke.
And I remember my dickhead singer back then, like he put a cigarette on my arm because the shows would get so sweaty. Remember how hot?
Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, I still think about that, and I've told you that before, and you recoiled in the same manner, but. Yeah.
That's like a fucked up thing for people to do.
It is. Well, there are fucked up people out there. But it's fine. So I went to the show and, you know, I was 15, actually.
He was a dick.
Yeah, he was a dick. And that's why I haven't added him on Facebook. He friend requested me and I was like, don't think so.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's got to be a moment of sweet payback in that regard, too, because, like, what a dick, you know? Like, that's like an asshole abusive thing to do to a human being.
But, yeah.
But, so what
but,
was
so the... my friend, what was sad about is...
So that's not even the sad part of the story.
No. The sad part was that, like, the friend who was, like, a fan of Eric's trip, you know, Philippe, he died a year later in a work-related incident involving a crane. I mean, a forklift.
How old is he?
Probably maybe like 16 or 17. It was like, it was sort of, I think he was working for like a family thing or, you know,
God.
I'm not sure, but yeah, so that was the sad, but whenever I think of Eric's trip, I think of him actually.
Yeah. Well, I know you're definitely more of a fan of them now than you were back then from the, judging by the rating you gave them.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I've read some, like, through some of what I wrote 15 years ago, and it's some of it's, you know.
No, I know, I know.
Because, like, I just didn't have the awareness.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know what I mean? Also, sonically, like, especially the Melvins. Like, Eric's trip, I think, I think for me it was, like, an easier bridge because they reminded me so much of Sonic Youth. But the Melvins, like, I liked them back then because I was supposed to, but I don't think I truly appreciated the Melvins until I was much older.
Same. No, most definitely. It was quite challenging for a 15-year-old.
Yeah, they're challenging music. It's really, it's like, that's the definition of challenging music. Yeah.
But look, it didn't fail. I'm open.
They
I'm
did
like,
better than whoever was next.
Better than Killjoys and Pure.
Well, that's probably when you were like, that was probably your like decision not to like alternative music anymore. And,
well,
like,
my third show was Lollapalooza with Beck.
Oh,
Hall,
yeah. I was
Mighty
at that one,
Boss
too.
Tones, Elastica, Jesus Lizard, Cypress Hill, Sonic Youth, Pavement.
How'd you get
seven
to that?
And a half.
How'd you get to that show?
I don't know. Maybe pulled a favor with my sister.
Okay, yeah. That was a great show. I was at that show, too.
Yeah.
Treble
Charger at the X. I can't believe I have the dates down.
Oh, you have Pavement. I think there's a band you're leaving off. No, you're pulling back out of there. Sorry. I was like, I think
I've definitely, this is not exhaustive.
No, that was it.
Here's the Pennywise show. So that was November 10th, 95.
Wow. Okay, looking,
And that was when I saw Final Uncle Chuckle first time, Rancid with AFI at the Warehouse, November 26, 1995.
No. Where you saw Pennywise.
Oh, yeah, Pennywise, sorry.
Chuckle.
Look, Rancid. I gave it a fucking 10.
You love Pennywise.
If I saw that now, I would not be giving... I mean, it's because it's a different time. I'm a different person.
If I was seeing that show now, out of a scale of 1 to 10, I would give that show a 300.
Yeah, you know, because...
That would be the greatest show ever to see. If I could see Pennywise... Joey Killer and Five Knuckle Chuckle from that era now?
I didn't see that.
I would trade my teeth for that.
Hardcore show with Grade. I remember that. Dude, okay, this show in Aaron Mills, probably at like a church.
Whoa, you saw Grade in 95?
Dude, I went to that show wearing a burgundy bomber jacket with a Green Day patch attached on the arm. And I remember walking in and being... It was so hardcore in there. It was the first time I'd ever seen a singer writhe on the floor. But I felt so embarrassed for my Green Day patch that I was crossing my arms like this so that my hand would go over the patch.
No, I
it was 95.
It was pretty. That scene was pretty judgmental back then.
Yeah.
But not. But what'd you think of Grade?
You know, like my.
You into it?
Yeah, it was eye-opening. Yeah. It was sort of like I could totally appreciate...
I didn't see
it
until later. I think the first time I saw him was when they opened for Propagandhi at the Elmo.
I dug how they were expressing themselves.
Was he writhing on the floor at that point, Kyle?
With dreads.
Oh, I remember he had dreads. Oh, yeah. No, he had dreads for a long time.
He was on the floor, and I just remember thinking, like, wow, he's, like, really feeling something.
A lot of emotion. I remember when I was in line for Propagandhi, and I said this with Tristan on the podcast, some guy in front of us was like, oh, you're going to love Grade. They're so emotional.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
I remember, emo. Emotional.
Emo. It was
like 90s,
the birth of that.
90s emo. So,
it wasn't the birth of it. It was the birth of it for the second time, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow, look at all the shows.
Oh, God. I should scan these in and put them up.
What was Satyricon showcased?
I don't remember.
Get Punked, featuring Five Knuckle Chuckle, Trunk, Special Ed, and Fully Loaded. Wow. Supernova Battle of the Bands with Special Ed. See, that's Special
Wait,
Ed.
Wait, where does it say Fully Loaded?
Fully
oh,
Loaded.
Oh, this one. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Snow Jam, Five Knuckle Chuckle, 10 Foot Pole High Standard. I was at that one. That was a great show. Okay, this is terrible radio now. It's just
reading. Actually, not. I don't mind it. Actually, I was like yesterday. I was listening to a podcast where he was reading something, and you can.
But he just like stopped talking, and they both silently read something.
No, it was he was reading.
Yeah, letters. Well, we're not actively reading it.
Anyway, Hockey Teeth last show. Okay, I'll stop.
Oh, you were at the Hockey
Teeth
last show?
Nick Flanagan was probably at a bunch of shows.
Nick Flanagan was definitely at the Hockey Teeth last show.
Yeah.
I don't know. You were definitely more punk than he was. Like,
I even included the raves because in the winter, in the winter bands weren't touring in the winter. So I would go to raves for like I was into jungle and stuff.
You don't have to make excuses. Bands were still touring. You're just kind of a raver.
Excuse me. I wanted to be social. And if you look, this is November. December.
Yeah, there's still punk shows happening.
Yeah, and I was still going to those shows. Oh my God, look how active I was. 5, 11, 17, 18, 24,
25. Oh, yeah, no. You were trying to go to a show every day.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sandy, you're like...
Let's see what the last entry was.
Let's see what the last entry was, yeah. Ducky Boys.
At the Cathedral, September 3rd, 99.
Wow, so you went late. I would have sort of... No, I think you must have stopped doing it as thoroughly.
I just stopped updating because then I...
No, but as thoroughly. Because, like, surely you went to a lot more shows than that if you're going to shows every day at some point.
Yeah, but you know, it passes and then you forget what you do.
Man.
But, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, there's more at the bottom, even.
But, barely... Okay.
Dance all crashers. Okay.
So yeah, that would be the last thing I did. But shit, I wonder what my five. Oh, I guess they're in another binder. I was gonna show you the letters anyway.
Oh, the letters from bands. Okay, well
I was quite active back then.
Your second last binder, but that is pretty amazing. So then, you and me both were fans of the radio show Mods and Rockers, which was a hugely popular radio show back then.
Yes.
For this community, it was on CIUT Community Radio. I was friends with Ed Fox, who was the current street reporter at the time. He was banned from going on the radio. After a few weeks, I called JC because he said he was looking for people to come in. I'm like, yo, do you need help? I'll come in. He's called me back and he said, yep, come in. And that's how I got on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get on the show?
Well, I'm guessing...
Because I think I know.
No, I know how I got
on the exactly.
Show.
Then I was going to say, the letter. You wrote a letter to JC, right?
Yeah, because, you know, Sunday nights, 10 to 12, I'd be, sitting in the kitchen doing math homework while my mom did dishes or whatever, listening to the show. And, you know, I'm pretty sure JC must have, like, I somehow knew that there was a gap.
He did a call. Yeah,
he did a call. Okay, he must have.
He did a call because it was clear Ed was not going to be allowed back on for a while.
And I listened to every week, so I caught it. And, I remember like pointing to the radio and telling my mom like I'm gonna be on this show like it's possible because until that point I was like kind of like getting to know everyone so I wrote like and I just felt so strongly I wrote it was like at least 7 pages like handwritten letter probably single space. You know, just like bursting. I I'd love to read it now. I don't think it exists, but just, you know, just
you might have photocopied it in another binder.
I don't think I did.
Okay.
But just basically like declaring my love for it and my enthusiasm. And yeah, he gave me a shot.
Yeah.
I guess he must have called me or something and I probably lost it. And and then that happened. And I was doing it for about 4 years and it was an amazing experience. And it happened concurrently like with my zine. And actually what led to a break, you know, what kind of led to my departure from the show 4 years later in 99, I was 19. Was when we were at a Warped Tour, maybe like Warped Tour 3 or something.
No, I think it was like Warped Tour. It must have been Warped Tour because...
It was early one.
After Warped Tour 2 that I think you and me got on Mods... Or Warped Tour 2 or 3 that you and me got on Mods and Rockers. And so it must be more tour four or five.
Okay.
You guys had it. Like, not to, but I think I'm just trying to do the math in my head.
I mean,
I remember the Warped Tour. It was one of the 7 seconds played. Blink-182, yeah. Black Eyed Peas, Eminem.
It was the one where you and I were supposed to at times sit at the booth at the
thing. We had a booth
thing,
for the last few years at Warped.
And I hadn't, you know, he had told me to be there a certain time, but I was so keen on getting an interview for my zine that I ended up being quite late and then had a terse exchange with him, which... like sucked, and it was basically not, you know, that was the last of it. But
By that point you had your zine.
I did it, but it was very painful actually.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah, I don't...
It was painful, but you know, you get through it.
Yeah, because he was like, you know Jeff JC. Not to reveal who he really is now. I guess we can't spoil who his secret identity is, but
no, we're totally like great now. I mean,
he was like, but he was like at that point, especially like a punk rock figure, like father figure in a lot of ways. To like, he was our employer almost, even though we weren't being paid.
Yeah, but he was so wonderful to have us on the show.
Oh yeah, we'd get free guest lists at every show.
Free guest, like that was a great perk. But it was also like fun to do, and like you know, people were calling in, and
you were a celebrity, like, and not like smallest C possible, like
university radio.
But like it was like one of those things where you could go to a show and it'd be like, oh, that's the person from that radio show.
I was a total scenester. Like, I just wanted to meet people, you know, through the zine, through the radio show. I don't know. I just, you know, the community, was my family.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. That was definitely how I felt, too, at times. Like, where it was, all you had were these people that you're going to shows with.
Totally. And, like, I just remembered the Fucked Up and Photocopied book release.
That Jill Heath organized?
Yeah. And I remember, like, having everyone there sign it like it was a yearbook, you know, like...
Did you really?
Yeah, it's there.
What?
Yeah, because, like, I didn't graduate school, so... this was my graduation kind of thing. Just in the
you did graduate ultimately because you went to university.
I went as a just a mature student.
Whoa! Look at this.
So yeah, Jill signed it, and Stuart something.
Holy.
But yeah, it was at the Cameron House.
Yeah.
The book launch.
I wasn't there. I was out of town when it happened.
Yeah. Actually, apparently, the guy who did this, he did another edition. Apparently, there should be a Fucked Up section in there. Cause
yeah, we sent flyers.
I sent him, he had flyers for like a year, but I haven't seen it yet. But this book was, I love this book. I actually wrote a paper on some
of Fucked Up and Photocopy is one of the best books ever.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Look at this. Nick Flanagan signed it here.
Oh, TCC.
Gene Krug combo. Two words. Suck it.
Suck.
The punkest phrase of the 1900s. Nick, Teen Craig combo.
Nice.
Randy U, Frosh Week 99, Allison Baker. Suck it.
Allison.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, this is amazing. I wish I did stuff like this. Like, at the time, I probably would have laughed and been like, that's so fucking corny. But now I'd be looking back on it being like, God damn it, do I wish I did that. There are. That looks like Chris Callahan. Who would have traced the... Oh, no, that's God. Martin Farkas.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely... That looks like a Martin thing.
Martin Kerr, Suicide Farkas. I'm trying to see who else. Toby? Toby from H2O signed your book.
Oh, yeah, and Pete from Bouncing Souls. I think that's Pete from Bouncing Souls. Yeah, so it's also... I went to school with them.
Wow, that is insane. Sandy, this is unbelievable. Melanie K signed it. And there's Jill Heath's comment.
Oh.
Wow, have you gone back and read these things? They're probably really
nice. No, I haven't. Hayden. Stuart, there. And Naomi.
Naomi, she's like a legit punk kind of Toronto legend, too. I know, I would love to have her on the show. A lot of these people I just haven't run into. You know, like, that's my thing now. But, Sandy, we are getting distracted because we are still going down this journey. So, yeah, that Fucked Up Photocopied. That book is incredible. That, like... I think, did Stuart Schrader write a thing about it, too? Someone I remember writing about how that's like the most important American hardcore book ever, because it's like a visual companion to the music, mm-hmm. and that, and I you know, kind of find it hard to argue with.
Yeah.
And to prove that you're not the only person who has embarrassing run-ins with their heroes, and mine's even more recently, when I met CM Punk, like 3 years ago, I'm a huge fan of him as the wrestler. I decided that it would be cool if I brought him a present. So I brought him a copy of Fucked Up and Photocopied.
Oh, that's a good gift.
It was a gift. Yeah, it was a really good gift. Kind of a Punisher move, though, when you think about it.
What?
Because it was just like, I don't know, I thought it would be cool. I don't know, just like put you on a different level as the person you're meeting.
Oh, yeah, when you're giving a gift.
Yeah. That being said, if anyone wants to give me gifts, it won't put me on a different level. I promise I'll be way more appreciative than he was. But not about me, Sandy. About you today. So, so I guess like that's 1999. So that kind of, what did you think?
My exit, yeah. I did Mods and Rockers from 96 to 99. Yeah. It's hilarious to think that I even did radio because I had a stutter back then. I remember, you know, when doing like the, like reading out the show listings, I'd sometimes have a hard time.
Yeah. Well, that's like, did you hear me on cue? I have a hard time reading out things now on the radio, you know? It's a painful experience having to do a live read.
Yeah. But you were really good at it, though. Well, you had a radio voice. Well, you have a radio voice. Well,
I appreciate that, Sandy, but I assure you, every stumble I have haunts my dreams at night. but that's the thing. Do you think you gained confidence? Like, ultimately ended kind of badly with Mods and Rockers. But yeah. Do you think it gave you confidence, or...
Oh, doing the show is a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Most definitely. I wouldn't, you know, be who I am if it wasn't for, you know, that time that I spent doing that, among other things, around that time. So, yeah, super important. Like, the way it ended, whatever, I kind of forgot about it, you know. As with, you know, shitty things, you kind of just let them go, whatever, and try to just look at, you know, the cool things that came out of it. And a lot of the cool things have come out of it. And you know what? We're buds now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like... They fucking let me stay at their Austin, like, apartment last year when I went down.
If he was still pissed off at you for showing up late to the Mods and Rockers booth in 1999 in 2015, I would describe that as exceptionally petty.
Well, yeah, true. That's totally fine. I mean, I get it. And you know what? That's a lesson to learn. You know what I mean? Like, don't be late. You know, and that's great. That's a great thing to have learned.
But it's hard as a kid. I can only imagine you're backstage at the Warped Tour. You know, that's like the primest ticket.
It was hard, but it's better that I learned that lesson then than in like later in life.
Well, I don't blame you for being late, you know. At the time, I was probably bummed out that you were late.
It was probably like an hour, so it's like, you know, it's quite a bit of time.
Yeah, but still, I don't know.
I was aware.
I would have probably, if I had a backstage pass, I would have been late too. but let's move on from that minor incident in your life onto other things.
Yeah.
So where'd you go from... Like 2000 kind of hits, and I guess by that point, you know, you
were just going to a lot of shows.
You were hardcore kids, right? By that point, it was like kind of becoming a hardcore kid more.
Well, I remember I was like, what's this hardcore stuff? Because I was listening to pretty melodic, I guess what would we call it? Like just hardcore punk, I guess.
Yeah.
But no, not hardcore punk. Sorry. Like, what would you call good riddance? Like skate punk?
Yeah, like melodic hardcore.
Melodic hardcore.
That's what Fat Mike calls what they play. So, like, I guess a derogatory term would be epifat punk.
Yeah.
But melodic hardcore, you know, like that's kind of what it is.
Something that's harder that you can kind of sing along to.
Yeah. Yeah, especially good riddance.
Good riddance, I would say, sort of would be a little bit of a crossover into the harder things.
You were at the Sick of All shows, right?
Yeah, I went to some Sick of All shows. I was still like sussing it out. You know, I remember buying like a Youth of Today CD from Sonic Boom.
Do you remember going to the Revelation Records tour in Buffalo? Because Ray Capo...
I did go to some shows in Buffalo. I did an interview with Ray Capo.
Yeah, you interviewed Ray Capo for your zine.
When he was in Better Than a Thousand.
Better Than a Thousand. In Buffalo, we went to the Epitaph Summer... No, it was the Rev Tour, I think it was called. It was In My Eyes.
Yeah, it was big.
It's funny, yeah, because In My Eyes, Battery... Mm-hmm. There was like no one there. It was at the Showplace Theater.
Yeah.
But a bunch of us drove down.
It's only an hour and a half. You know, it was cool. So yeah, remember, buying the CD and coming home and sitting on my bed and listening to it and just you know,
trying,
just trying, like, just like, oh, I was open, my ears are open, but I was just like, and I remember being kind of getting excited and kind of like smirking because it was kind of funny, like, you know, like just the way he sings.
He's got an extreme vocal.
Definitely extreme vocal, you know, it sounds like he's constipated kind of, you know, and it's a little sort of high pitched a bit. And yeah, so I, you know, like it was cool. It was like different. It was different.
Yeah.
And yeah, so but I wasn't so much I still had a foot firmly in the melodic side of things.
Yeah.
Me, and maybe that just comes from my foundation with ABBA, or, you know, like super pop, like singable and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Just yeah.
So at what point did you do any other bands between S&I and Fucked Up?
I didn't know. I guess I was busy using other aspects, you know, help with the label, publicity, you know, doing the thing with Fab.
And then you got a real Melanie. You had a real job too.
And then in 2001, I mean, I had been working at HMV.
You had real jobs. I shouldn't say that they're not real jobs, but you had like
a career. Like a desk job. Yeah, I had a career job. Kind of, I somehow fell into it, really just based on a good reputation. Like,
based on tenacity. Don't undersell what you did. Like, you managed to like talk yourself into a job.
Well, I got the desk job through my boss at HMV, Steve Hoy. His girlfriend worked in the tape library of Alliance Atlantis, which is a national broadcaster, during a time when they had launched 7 new channels and were hiring 100 people. So I got, like, you know, like, I'm a high school dropout, and I got in because I came highly recommended from my boss, who sees that I'm a hard worker, you know.
We also went out and got a bunch of killer letters of recommendation.
I don't remember that, but
I remember JC
writing. Yeah, I did get recommendations. Yeah, yeah, I did
a lot of really nice letters of recommendation, and I also I forgot. You wrote a crazy resume. I remember looking at it just as, because here I was at the same time, kind of figuring out what I was going to do with my life, and it's just like, oh my God, do I have to step up my game?
Yeah, I was really super active back then. I've kind of chilled. I'm chilling it now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yeah, and then I got a desk job in 2001, and I started working there like 6 months after Fucked Up came together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Fucked Up came together in March 2001, and I got finally hired on September 2001.
So how did you join Fucked Up?
Well, Mike Desat came up to me at a show. You know, I was going to a lot of shows, and I guess we had a lot of mutual friends. And you know what? Maybe, I can't remember. Yeah, you know what? I guess we had met when I did one of those Streeters things for my zine, where I asked a question, and he was one of the people that I had asked for that issue. Yeah. So we met back then. So, you know.
He used to wear that Maple Leafs hat with the brim split in two, and it was sewn back together with a confine patch sewn on the side. And then confine patch written on the other side, I think.
I remember his hat.
He'd always wear that hat. Even when we were playing and Fucked Up, he'd always wear that hat for the first couple of years.
So, yeah. So I guess he knew I played bass, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, yeah, sure, game. You know, although at that point, I hadn't really played bass since, I'm guessing I left S&I, I feel like that would have been in 97 or 98. So by that point, yeah, it's been like 3 years. But, you know, pick up the bass was, I mean, I sucked at first. Like,
yeah.
I remember having to actually write out tab for like our first few shows, maybe our first 5 or 10 shows, having to write tab and follow it along.
Well, because I joined that the third show. So when you joined Fucked Up, what was the lineup? Do you remember? Callahan was on drums?
You know, I don't remember exactly.
Josh was on vocals, obviously.
Yeah, Josh was on vocals. You know, Callahan,
I think he played drums before.
Jonah. No,
I thought you were in the band before. No, you were definitely in the band before Jonah, from what I've been told. Since back then.
I can't remember if we did a rehearsal with Chris Callahan.
There were definitely a couple of rehearsals.
Okay.
You guys did, because then I remember Mike asked Jonah.
But you weren't there. We should ask Jonah.
I was Mike's roommate, though. So I was, like, very privy to what was going on with you guys. Like, I don't mean, you were there, so you'd remember better. But I remember being kind of pissed. The only reason I know it, because another band that I'm kind of glossing over that I was obsessed with, and kind of the last band that I was really obsessed with like that, was probably Left 4 Dead and The Swarm. And so I was kind of jealous of Mike being in a band with Chris Callahan.
Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't be? Chris is a fucking cool, chillest dude ever. Best dude.
Still friends of ours to this day, obviously. Yeah. But like more than that,
he's real.
Still like, you know, you can't find any. There are very few people that are like a compass as far as like the way they are always pointing in what they believe in, and he's one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not about him today. It's about you, Sandy. So back to you. So you start that job.
So yeah, the band started the job. You know, 9 to 5 sucks. Here's the thing. Okay, so I worked there for 7 years, and I got promoted to another department, like in the middle, from the tape library to programming, like scheduling for, you know, like lifestyle channels, yeah. And also like Showcase too, which was kind of cool, you know. And I had a lot of freedom there, but you know, and I made some decent coin actually.
You're making good money.
Like for, you know, I opening pay was like $34,000 or something like that. But by the end of it, it's like everyone, you know, the company had been bought by another company, and like there were a bunch of layoffs, and I remember all my colleagues, like the worst thing that could happen to you was getting let go.
Yeah.
And I remember having that fear of like, oh my God, you know, what will happen, you know, like if what am I going to do if I ever lose my job? But then the band, like cool shit was happening with the band, and I was maximizing my vacation days every year, you know, which was 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It became 3 weeks over time. And, I remember thinking like, shit, could I do this? Like, could I actually make do the band in full time and like not, you know, be a cog in this machine? Like, am I going to be okay? And, I got to say, I'm so happy that the band happened in my life, and that we were able to do this together and still do it for so long. Let me finish. Because I've learned that my time is so much more valuable than money. I'm making less money than I was working 50 hours a week, but I can now do what I want when I want. And I don't think I'm ever going to go back to 9 to 5 for someone else.
You definitely had the most to lose when we went full time. You know, like,
dude, I was buying our plane tickets.
Yeah.
Cause I had the
credit card.
Yeah. And a credit card
that wasn't maxed out.
Yeah.
With record purchases on eBay or whatever we were spending our money on trying to figure things out.
So that was scary. And I remember like on the last day of work, August 6th, 2008, had a little goodbye thing at work, hopped on my bike, rode down to Massey Hall, and then we opened for the Stooges.
What a day.
That was like one of the best days of my life.
That was a pretty fucking awesome day.
Yeah, having a cigarette with Mike Watt, you know, that was like super sick.
Oh, there's just so much. Yeah, that was like a, you know, that was like one of those experiences. Like, we've obviously opened for a lot of bands, and sometimes it's just one of those things where it's like, well, that sucked. And I'm sure bands have opened for us and been like, well, that sucked, you know, but that was one of those times where you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah,
like,
it was so crazy. What an
amazing experience.
Even though we had 2 scab, like, members.
Yeah. No Jonah, no Mike.
Yeah, which is, you know, big thing. But I worked out great. But honestly, like, that venue for that show, the balconies, just, like, it looked like fire. Just everyone had their arms up and the roar.
Not during our set.
No, during the lighter set. Yeah, our set, you know, it was fine.
I was like, I remember just looking side stage and seeing Iggy Pop watching us.
Yeah, I saw him watch us for a little bit.
And I was just like, well, I don't give a fuck what happens now.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of bad, like, and that, you know, like, talk about feeling fortunate. There's been so many times in this band where it's just like, well, that was the bucket list.
Yeah. The craziest thing, like, I have actual memories of, like, playing, like having a set and looking, like, having a quick look backstage and seeing Pat Smear, or another time Bob Mould, or another time, you know, like, just tons of, or like Mike Patton, even.
Oh yeah, in Australia.
In Australia. It's just like, whoa, like, it's crazy.
Well, it's weird because it's like, yeah, it's like all, especially for people like us, it's like, all you are in the end is a fan. You know, it's not like, I don't know, I mean, actually, you've played your instrument way longer than I've been doing what I've been doing, but, you know, I never thought of myself as a musician. I've always thought of myself more as a music fan that fell into being a musician.
I kind of feel the same.
Yeah. And it's like, so did you get to a point where these people that were your heroes as a young person are now your peers? Is like, that's the cherry on the cake.
Yeah.
On Sunday, I guess. It's, you want the cherry on a cake.
It's like, yeah, it's one of the best parts.
Well, Sandy, I could go on for a longer time with you right now, but this seems like a nice point to end it.
Sure.
And we'll keep it nice and brief on the anniversary. And you come back from part two.
Yeah.
And we'll go way more into fucked up and stuff, but I think ending right now, you know,
good. Oh, are you going to do one with like, how fun would it be if you did one with some of your bandmates? If you did like a whole episode.
I did one with my bandmates just now.
No, okay.
What, you mean like different members? Like you do a whole episode with different people?
But then you have to edit together.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the same sort of relationship that you and I have with everyone in the band, you know?
But then if it's only going to be, instead of one person 60 minutes, it'll be six people 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I still, you know?
Oh, well, you're not going to talk to yourself. Like I said, you do anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I talk to myself. You know, I could do a monologue. This one would be, I guess, kind of like that, because I'll be talking to myself at the beginning of the show and the end.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for doing this. This has been awesome. And
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you. We did it.
Yeah, we did it.
Yay.
Well, you did it.
Well, yeah, but you were here for it. You've actually been like, you were there when I recorded the first episodes I ever recorded, when I did the Arcade Fire.
Oh, yeah, like on your laptop speaker.
No, I did it with this microphone.
Oh, okay, okay. Oh, but in earlier episodes, it would be in a loud room.
It was a loud room. Yeah. It was backstage at Meltdown Festival in Germany. I did the Arcade Fire.
Yeah, that was it was the Leeds and Reading-esque.
Oh, yeah, like thing. Meltdown. They had like one in the south, one in the north of Germany. Anyway. This is why we're ending the podcast, because now we're just going to start reflecting on actual individual things. Yeah. Let's go back to looking at the binder.
Cool. And,
thanks, Andy, so much.
All right, take care.
I'm going to incorporate it just like this, Sandy, that we were just talking off air and that you wanted to come on and, you know, we're obviously going to have you back for part two, but you thought it was important to talk about this and, yeah, I kind of think we should talk about it too.
Well, I was just, the last thing I wanted to say was, like, I feel like where I am now and, you know, my involvement was fucked up. It's a culmination of everything that I had done before that we kind of talked about and, like, all these attempts to sort of, you know, find a community and like learn about shit. Sorry, I'm a little brain dead right now, but
no, I don't think so. You know, like, oh, I know what you're saying.
From just wanting to reach out and make a connection, you know, whether it was street teaming with Raw Energy as a 15-year-old, to, you know, going to shows, to doing the zine, you know, the radio show, you know, and then being in a band, like, It all comes together. Like, I'd wanted so badly as a teenager to be able to, like, tour and play and, like, meet people from all over the world and see how things are done in different places. But the likelihood of that was so low. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was pretty much a boys' sport to tour. And I tried so hard, like, you know, befriending bands and being cool, trying to be cool, really. I probably was like the biggest nerd, you know, annoying girl. So the fact that I'm like, I've somehow managed to make it happen is pretty cool. And I think that, you know, that like, I feel like that's maybe some like something to keep in mind, you know, if anyone's listening and like you want it, you really have, you know, there's something you wish would happen. Like, it's very possible to actually make it happen over time, sustained effort, and like just a natural enthusiasm for it. So
I think also, you know, one thing that kind of hitting me now is, you know, everything we've talked about is like how much harder you had to work to get to the same position that I've kind of fallen into, you know? Well, like, you had to prove your worth at every step.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of fell into it at every step.
Well, I mean,
guess that's white male privilege.
But also, I think, I mean, you know, like, you know, we once talked about how, like, you know, eloquent-sounding kids are often, like, private school kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know this, but, like, you know, you went to private school, mm-hmm. right? And I even back then, you know, and I'm like the, you know, daughter of an immigrant, you know, we spoke Portuguese at home. I remember being like envious of how eloquent you were on the radio, and there I was like stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
But I still didn't let that stop me. I still kept busy and stuff. But I gained a lot of satisfaction from what I was doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, connecting with people was awesome. Like, you know, my friends are really important to me. Even, you know, acquaintances. Just, I love being around, you know, good energy people. And I found that in punk.
But did you, at that, when you're saying, just because it makes me think about it, when you're saying that you, do you feel that you had to try harder? Like, at every stage, do you feel that you had to, like, your zine had to be better? And your, you know, like, you had to prove your, like, when you met these bands, you had to, like, work hard to be taken seriously by them?
Yeah, maybe, but also, like, it's just sort of, like, a part of my personality where when I do something, I want it to be the best that I can do, and I want to get better at what I do. Like, I just, again, maybe that's a tie-in with my perfectionism, but I just want to show the best, because if you can show your best, then you open opportunities. Mm-hmm. Like thing, you know, opportunities for cool shit starts to open up, right? So that's why I aim so high. Maybe that eventually something cool would happen. And then it did.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you're living your dream at this point?
You know, I think I might be living the dream. And it's so funny because it doesn't feel like it.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the life's great irony, is that the dream never feels like the dream until you... I don't know, I think, like, the only time I really get to appreciate is when I kind of think about who I was when I was 14 and what I would think about looking at where I wound up.
Yeah.
And just knowing you, I don't know, I imagine it was kind of feel the same way.
Yeah. I wouldn't believe that this would be my life right now. So, yeah. Now it's time to sow those seeds for the next thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been trying to do, and I'm going to do this winter.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. So that in another 15 years, I'll be, you know, living another dream.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, because, like, you, it's weird because, like, you achieve all your dreams, but you're, like, in your 30s.
I know. I'm 35.
So what do you do? You know, it's like, what's the next stage? It's like, you know, you got to start another, get another set of dreams, another set of life.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of interests.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. I don't mean, like, you know, we're doomed. But, I mean, at the same time, it's like, oh, yeah, it's like, you know, like, it's like, oh, all my heroes were about this age. You
know, probably at that point, I might just move.
Yeah?
Like, to another country.
There we go.
I'm open to that.
There we go. So part two, you're saying, might have to happen
in a different location. It might be Euro style, Sandy.
Well, until Sandy Barcelona and Damien Toronto for life meet up again. Thank you, Sandy, for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.